Did you say corn pudding?
corn pudding. Yeah. Okay, you ready?
Fuck. What the fuck did we just watch?
Yeah, here we go.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Hello, and welcome to Just Another Review Podcast, or JARP for short. I'm one of your two hosts, Russ. It's Mr. Sean.
That's right, kid. I'm the disheartened and resentful Sean. But before we go on a hike, cross a stone bridge, and are never seen again, please send us your love ballads or I want songs to jarppodcast@gmail.com. That's J-A-R-P podcast@gmail.com.
This podcast is meant to be a companion for you post-episode or a litmus test pre-episode. Either way, we are talking about episode one of the Apple Plus series, Schmigadoon.
Nice. So if you haven't seen the first episode, well, then you're in for a special treat, because we're going to break down the whole first episode and spoil the whole friggin' thing. Consider yourself all warned. Oh, my mom would be so happy right now that I sang a piece of Oliver. And alongside our review of Schmigadoon, we will also be pairing it with a fantastic movie from our childhood.
Yes, we are trying our best to match these current series with movies from our childhood. And this week, I've chosen the 1986 film, Labyrinth. The Bog of Eternal Stench. Oh,
I'll make you a prince.
I need to get water. Sorry, excuse me.
Really? Russ needs to get water. He's been chugging on a lot of peanuts. A lot of penises this weekend. It was the Chugathon Penis Festival. And, you know, it really hurts the back of his throat. There's some really big men in this contest. And, you know, Russ, he doesn't back down from a challenge. So, you know, he gave it his all.
What is wrong with me?
And that's why his throat hurts.
Oh.
All this manly juice is coming up.
I sucked back a couple of peanut M&Ms before we started. And
see, it's his code word.
The peanuts are just resting in the back of my throat.
Peanuts is the code word.
Did you hear the magic code word, kids?
I'm gonna go check out that new penis movie.
The new Peanuts movie?
Yeah, you know, with Snoopy and Charlie Brown, the new penis movie.
Yeah, I love me some peanuts.
It kind of sounds like you're saying penis.
Oh.
No, man, the penis movie.
Wasn't there an old comedy where they're in an airplane and this guy's got a bag of peanuts and he turns to somebody and says, would you like to try my peanuts? Is that from a movie?
I think you made that up.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, we are trying our best to match these current series with movies from our childhood. This week, I've chosen the 1986 film, Labyrinth.
Smells bad. Super bad.
Huggle?
now you're choking.
Huggle?
Huggle?
The land of eternal stench.
Friend?
Friendly? Yes, I'll turn you into a prince. Prince of the land of eternal stench. All right,
let's get into it. Schmigadoon,
let's get on the schmiggies.
Schmigadoon, who's in it?
Apple Plus here.
Apple Plus.
Trying to move its way up in the rankings, isn't it, eh?
Yes, it's more than just the morning show. It's got other content, too.
It's more than just Ted Lasso.
Oh, season 2 just dropped.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, who's in Schmigadoon, you ask? No, he didn't.
Who's in Schmigadoon, I ask?
Cecily Strong, Keegan-Michael Kay, Alan Cummings, Fred Armisen, Kristen Chenoweth, Martin Short, Jane Krakowski, and Liv and Maddie star Dove Cameron, the descendant of Maleficent.
Oh, another Descendants reference.
More Descendant references, please, and thank you. The show was created by Cinco Paul and Ken Dario and directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. Executive producer is Lorne Michaels. And it was filmed in Vancouver, Sean.
Oh! I imagine on a giant green screen, though.
Possibly.
And a big, well, I some feel sort of a studio.
There's a lot of sets there.
Yeah, I guess there was the outdoor stuff too, yep. Right? Yeah, whoops, the setup, right?
It's a very old Hollywood set. Cinco, named after the day he was born, the Mexican holiday, the Cinco de Mayo. Cinco Paul, he had this idea over 20 years ago, and he wrote all the original music for the series and served as the showrunner. Cinco and Ken have been collaborating since 1999. They've done a lot of animation screenplays.
Right. And now they're taking his idea 20 years later into the realm of live action
musical. So the synopsis, based on what I stole from Wikipedia, a couple, Melissa, which is played by Cecily Strong, and Josh, which is played by Keegan-Michael Key, go on a backpacking trip in an attempt to patch up their failing relationship. Aww. They discover a magical town called Schmigadoon, which is perpetually trapped in a golden age style musical, and slowly realize that they cannot leave until they find true love. And by the way, the title and concept is a parody of the 1947 musical Brigadoon.
Brigadoon.
Yeah, you know that movie that you love.
Yeah, everyone knows Brigadoon.
Everybody knows Brigadoon.
The 1947 classic Brigadoon.
Brigadoon. I divided my the next part up by the songs for your enjoyment,
right.
Sean.
Right.
So the first section I've captured is the our first song, which is called Schmigadoon, and my favorite bit was where the men are men and the cows are cows.
Right.
So here we are. We've got Cecily, we've got Keegan, and they are trapped. Keegan doesn't look like he's invested in the relationship as much as Cecily's character is. And here they are on a couple's retreat, and they go for a little walk into the forest, and they find themselves in Schmigadoon. What do you think, Sean? What are you thinking of the first little bit here?
Well, it starts with, you think they're a true love couple, you know?
Yes.
They show how this couple met. There's a nice magical moment at the candy machine, and they seem like a very, very happy, jovial couple. And then it skips ahead just a couple years, and it turns out that that spark didn't seem to last too long. I mean, they're only 3 years into their relationship and they're already on a couple's retreat. So I guess it's because they're old, you know. It's kind of like they're out of options, so they got to make this one work or something like that, or I don't know. No, I'm just being mean.
They are professional medical professionals, so you
that's
know
true.
They're probably both very career driven. So yeah, it seems like if there's issues in the relationship, it seems very one-sided. Like it seems to be coming from Keegan-Michael Key's character a little bit more.
Yeah, let's just call him Josh, so you don't have to keep stumbling on his name there.
Josh and Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa's all into this relationship.
She seems to be. Yeah.
She's trying her hardest. It seems to even rekindle the spark that is lost. And he's just sort of meh. He's, you know, and nothing's wrong. Like, why can't you be complacent with mediocrity kind of thing here?
Right.
You know, we have our good days, our bad days. Why don't you just leave it at that? You know, and she, yeah. No.
And it seems what this relationship needs is a good old tablespoon of Schmigadoon.
Teaspoon of sugar. Somewhere.
Teaspoon of sugar. I really like the opening song. I'm all in. We could do this kind of stuff in every show and I'd be all in.
Men are men and the cows are cows. It dates itself, like it shows like what type of what you can expect in this town. It's
right.
Very 1940s. The men are men and the women just hang by their side. You know, I think there's even a line in the song about how the men can follow their dreams and the women just tag along, you know, along on this side. I mean, it's not funny right now. Like, we're laughing only because it's so tongue in cheek how they do it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we're not laughing at that prospect. We're laughing at that it's ridiculous.
Yes.
That's what we're laughing at here. If anybody needs us to clarify, we're laughing at the ridiculous.
I thank you for clarifying. I was about
and to it is ridiculous.
You. It is ridiculous. Yeah. It's, it's looking at it in a 2021 lens and bringing it forward. So you even within that, like there's like a colorblind casting, the idea of colorblind casting, but then them not.
What does that mean? Just like interracial couples and there's a mix of everybody. Is that what it means?
I think it's kind of like, and I think UK is far ahead of us than maybe North American media, but they, when they approach a theatrical production or even someone on the BBC, they just look for the best actor. So it doesn't matter if they're not looking at skin color, they're just looking at who's the best person for this role. And that's the person who's cast it. Nice. So they're kind of getting away from the idea of like, well, this would only happen.
Well,
to
the
a
main
white
character
guy.
Needs to be a white male, right. and a white exactly. female. If there's right. some sort of love story, it can only be right. they either both have to be white or they both have to be black or they both, you know, it can't be
right.
She's a black female falls in love with a white male. And, yeah. and now, which is totally cool.
And I think we're seeing this more and more with new things that are coming out.
Thank God. Thank goodness.
And then there's a guy who does unspeakable things to pigs. Is it pigs or cows? I can't remember.
Yeah, they keep dropping in these one-liners and these songs every now and then of like just funny things. Yeah. I do unspeakable things to pigs. Yeah. Like, wait, what?
I've watched this episode now two or three times, and what started cracking me up every time was just like Cecily's Josh and Melissa's reactions. So they pretty much like throughout the episode, they probably each get about like 5 or 10 different like, huh? Like as they kind of yeah. register what someone just said, or just kind of are taken aback by someone breaking out in song. And their faces are pretty comical. Two amazing comedic actors, those two. So yeah,
I get it. And I know, you know, I know why all of a sudden it went from, you know, they're walking in the woods to sort of a, you know, basically they've stumbled into Oz almost, you know, without the fantastical creatures and stuff. But, you know, it's just luscious green, completely saturated. You know, it's a totally fantasy, you know, pristine world or whatever like that. But it got like really green screeny at first. And I know it needed to be, and I know it still fits with the whole context of it, but for some reason it just removed me a little bit. Like some of the green screen work was really apparent, and I don't know if they saw it and they were like, yeah, it's fine because it's
meant
this
to be
funny
a set.
Cardboard cutout world, or you know, or they just got lazy. I don't know, but yeah.
And that didn't bother me at all. My assumption was actually there was no green screen and that it was all real sets that they built. But that's just because I didn't get the feeling of a green screen.
Right.
You know, when people like drive cars in movies and you can always tell like there's the background outside the car is a green screen. It wasn't obvious like that for me.
So they arrive at this town and they go to book a hotel room. And of course, because it's the 1940s and they're unmarried, they can't stay in the same hotel room. But that old lady that's following them around, she has such distinct. She looks like a lifelike version of Cruella de Vil from the 101 Dalmatians. I got to throw that in there. If there is a lifelike person that actually looks like Cruella de Vil. And
she's
scared the shit out of it. Is that the Descendants lady?
She's also in Descendants. That's Kristen Chenoweth. She plays Maleficent in the Descendant movies, but I think she's just a very accomplished Broadway musical star, but has also been in a lot of films and television as well. I thought she did a very she had a one line in it where she was like, "Oh yes, you are." And she said, like, she was kind of going back with the kind of the carny guy, and just like she had a little like musical ting in the back of her line there, which was awesome, I thought. But yeah, she's great. So they go in the hotel, and then Josh falls asleep, and Melissa goes for a little walk and runs into
What is it? The love. What's he mans
like a tunnel of love.
Ride or amusement. Yeah. The tunnel of love. That's it. Yeah. Some sort of, I don't know what, you know, something you would see at like an amusement park.
A carnival.
You know?
Like,
where you get on a little boat and it takes you around it's a small world, but this one's called a tunnel of love or whatever like that. Yeah.
And he sings a song called You Can't Tame Me. So, he's recognizing there's some sort of chemistry between him and Cecily's character, and so Melissa, and he has a nice little song. And again, it feels very stagey, like it's done to make it look like he's performing on a soundstage or even theatrically. It's done. His song is very theatrical. Again, I love it. And he says he can't be with anyone, but if anyone could it be someone like you? So there's obviously they're building some sort of tension there between those two characters.
You think maybe this could be her true love, right?
Maybe, or just somebody
that tests.
Yeah, that tests that, and she's going to figure out something that she's missing from Josh, and maybe this is the character that might bring it to you. It'll be part of one of my predictions that I'll ask you at later here. And then they head into the morning where they're gonna have breakfast before they leave. Before they plan to leave Schmigadoon, and the one thing on the menu is corn pudding.
Corn pudding, and they've never heard of it, so they make the giant mistake of asking the waitress, "What is corn pudding?"
And
what is corn pudding?
And their one line, my favorite line was, "If you want my pudding, you'll have to marry me." And that's so like there's the chorus and there in each, most of the songs all have like the chorus and the dancers that are always in the background. And obviously the female characters are singing that to the men characters, as far as if you want my pudding, you'll have to marry me. Good stuff.
Great stuff.
So that, and then at one point with this song, they kind of bring in, Melissa, and Melissa actually contributes to the song, so she's figuring out that she can actually engage a little bit more. But then it is so weird, and pretty much Josh is commenting for the whole time he's been in Schmigadoon how weird it is, abruptly in front of everyone else's face, even though he thinks it's just a gimmick.
Yeah, he's not digging Schmigadoon too much, no, eh? He's not on the Schmigadoon train.
No. He's not even being kind. He's just being obvious that he's uncomfortable with the whole thing. And they leave, and they try to leave, but unfortunately they're on some sort of trick bridge that doesn't allow them to leave Schmigadoon.
They can't leave this universe. No.
And so they're interrupted by a leprechaun played by Martin Short, who sings the closing number and basically says, "Within its borders ye are bound until at last true love is found." Right. And there's the premise of our show.
There we go. So there actually is a underlying story amongst all these goofy songs. These two either need to, I guess, patch up what they had, or I don't know, jump ship and find new love in Schmigadoon.
Right. Maybe a carny.
Not sure.
Yeah. What? Who stuck out for you? It's a pretty diverse cast. Who really stuck out for you?
Alan Cummings. He was the mayor. Yeah. And just because he's a little bit more famous than some of the other faces. I wasn't used to them anyways. They could be just as well as famous as him in the musical community, but I'm not privy to it. But Alan Cummings and then you know, Keegan-Michael Key, right? And Cicely Strong. I keep thinking I saw her on The Office. She was on The Office, but she wasn't.
No, I don't think so. No. Yeah, you said Cicely, and I've been saying Cecily. Interesting. This is why we just call them by their character name.
Cecil.
Cecil.
And then Y. Cecil Y.
I thought both Cecily and Keegan did a great job. Though I felt like sometimes their dialogue felt a little forced at times. But aside from that, I thought Martin Short, it was great to see him. Aaron Tveit as Danny Bailey, I thought did a great job.
It was like you were watching a musical because, you know, like they were singing and then there was always like a little beat for Melissa and Josh to, like you say something, right?
React,
like,
yeah.
What is this? Yeah. Oh, da, 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 da. Oh my gosh, where are we? Da, 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 you know, and right. It, you know, yeah, it was funny, the reactions. I wonder what is the casting choice in them. Are they there for the comedic reactions, or, you know, like we got a piece of it with Cecil Y?
Oh man.
Anyways, with the character Melissa who started singing, you know, is that the start, I guess prediction time, is that the start of them gonna start singing now?
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah,
I
would, my guess would be that both of these guys are singing by the end.
Yeah,
I think they are both they both can sing, and so Cecily recently left Saturday Night Live, so this is maybe a vehicle for her post Saturday Night Live. And Keegan-Michael Key obviously gets a lot of work after Key and Peele.
My wife was mentioning it is a nice kind of change of character for him. He's normally the larger than life, jovial, just big teddy bear, and in this he's the negative Nancy in this, you know. And you know, he's done those sort of characters in his sketch comedy show,
right.
But you know, I think a lot of people think of him as the big jovial teddy bear kind of guy, and here he's I'm not gonna say a dick, he's just not buying into everything, and he's very vocal about his distaste in being there. And I mean, how come they haven't freaked out yet? I know they started to freak out when they realized they couldn't leave the place.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like their initial reaction to the place is like, oh, we just stumbled upon this hidden town in the middle of the, like it. Like there wasn't a moment where they were like, what the?
Can we just talk to somebody that's not in character, please?
Yeah. Like, where the F are we? Right. Yeah. And, they just sort of accepted it that it was a hidden town in the middle of nowhere. And I wish maybe they, for at least for a beat or two, that they had some sort of reaction. Like this world is not real, or
it's a prop.
It's, you know, what's the word again? I'm lost for words again. It's just not part of the real reality. You know, it's a sidebar or something like that. You know, I don't know.
I think
an alternate universe, I guess.
Yes, I think we have to like get in. I think as soon as you start questioning that, obviously the show comes to a halt. And obviously Josh's character doesn't like musicals, and that's kind of his sticking point. And Melissa's characters, you know, the character Melissa is obviously going with the flow here. And, you know, obviously we see her earlier in the show watching a musical on TV, and so she's obviously, she digs this, but they're not really questioning the reality at this point.
Yeah, I think what I mean is, you know, it might have, you know, if it was like, oh, I bumped my head, and then they all woke up and they walked into this place, you know, it was like a dream or something, right. Then, you know, but it wasn't, they actually were on some sort of a physical retreat in the woods, they've been gone, and they just sort of, you know, all of a sudden just cross this plane into another and there was no reaction on their part that we've really gone from a yin to a yang universe, you know. And,
well, have you ever really been,
I don't want them to waste time on it, but like I'm saying, it would have been nice some sort of reaction at least. I don't know, because they were grounded in reality and now it's completely
grounded off, reality off. Did you hizzle. See that vending machine scene? That's not reality.
The what machine? You see,
the vending machine when all the chocolate bars fell down.
I guess that was a little fantastical.
Yeah.
Are you saying you think the whole, I mean, obviously Schmigadoon
it's
is
a show.
Okay.
It's a show.
I'm just we're just trying to talk about it. Isn't that the whole point of this podcast? Fine.
What is the point?
It's fucking awesome. Schmigadoon. Don't think about it. Just watch it.
Yeah.
Go along for it.
Don't you ever like get really mad at your younger brother and then you just wish that he'd be taken away by the Goblin King and then turn off a light switch and then suddenly he's gone? And then do you question the reality or do you just fight to get him back?
I don't have a younger brother. I think if you asked my older sister that question, she'd probably be like, "Fucking take him away." You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm not questioning if goblins exist.
Goblin King.
Just take my younger brother away.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, here,
my Goblin King will come and take my brother right away right now.
Did she say it?
Say what?
Here's some predictions for you. Here's some questions, aka predictions. Will they find true love with each other? Will our main characters, Melissa and Josh, find true love with each other or others, somebody else? Or themselves? Will they have to love themselves?
Ooh. I think they'll find it together because, you know, it is only episode one, so who knows yet? Just on the basis that I didn't see a match for Josh yet. You know what I mean? Right. Melissa could maybe match up with the You Can't Tame Me Love Tunnel guy, but Josh, I didn't see.
He was flirting with the corn pudding girl.
Oh, the corn pudding girl.
There was a little bit of flirtation with Dove Cameron there. Although I would assume Dove Cameron is half his age.
I don't know then. I really don't know. I don't know. I think I might go out on a limb and I don't know.
You can wishy-washy here. Go out on a limb.
Yeah, other people. They're going to realize maybe.
Nice.
And one's going to stay in Schmigadoon and one's going to leave.
Oh, interesting.
It's going to be like a Pleasantville kind of thing.
Who's Toby Maguire stays behind? No.
No.
Toby Maguire goes back.
Yeah. Reese Witherspoon stays.
Yeah. And like, yeah, someone's got to question that reality. Will. we've already talked about this. Cecily and Keegan, they'll start singing and dancing by the end of the season. You're on.
We hope so, anyways.
Yeah. Now, so I mentioned this already. It seems very one-sided. It seems like Josh has kind of like fallen out of love with Melissa. Melissa seems to be still in it. But why do we think there is? Do we think Melissa did something to hurt Josh and that's why he's like this way? Or do we think Josh is just being a prick?
I think he just got stale and stagnant, right? He just got complacent with not trying anymore and his relationship just became what it is. And yeah.
Okay, my prediction would be that he's actually the one that we should have more empathy for. I feel like it's going to be revealed a couple episodes in that she's done something to actually hurt him. And that's why he's kind of
a little jaded.
Yeah. So it's not him just. Yeah. So that's my.
I like that
guess.
Let's see what happens.
Oh, a little surprise.
All right. Well, you picked it. You got to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to watch it. Let's rate it.
This shit is awesome.
You suck.
This is our rating. You explain it? Who's explaining it?
Yeah, sure. Well, whatever. Let's explain it. Let's explain it one word at a time. This
is
the
part.
Where
we
rate
the
show,
period,
out
of
five
jerps.
So one is you didn't really like it, and then the five is like it's the best show ever. So we kind of rate in between there. I gave it a 4.
Wow.
Yes.
I had a feeling you were going to really like this.
Yeah, I really liked it. I loved the musical aspect. I loved the comedy bit. I loved all like the characters, the supporting cast. I felt some of the line deliveries was a little stiff, but on second watching, that didn't really bother me too much. I thought all the songs really snapped for me. Like, I kind of went away thinking about them or maybe be able to like they stuck with me a little bit more. I watched, because we're going to talk about Labyrinth in a bit, so I watched the documentary, because I do have Labyrinth DVD, and I have and Special Features has Inside the Labyrinth, and I watched that as well, and Jim Henson talks about why he makes movies and what's important to him when he makes a movie, and one of the questions he asked himself is, were you happier after the movie when you came in? And I was definitely happier watching Schmigadoon before I started watching it. It made me happy. So that's why I gave it a 4. What about you, Sean?
What if your goal isn't to make a happy-go-lucky film? What if it's to make a thought-provoking film or a sad film? Then Jimmy's Jimmy's.
That's sort Jimmy's of... goal. That's Jimmy's. Oh, okay. So when Jim Henson makes a,
I
makes
thought
a
that movie, was his a barometer no. on what makes a good film.
I didn't explain that properly.
No. It's okay.
When he makes a film, he thinks about were people happier than when they came in? What right. was there a sense of substance? Was it about life? Did it make a difference to you if you saw it? That's what's important to him when he makes a film.
Okay.
Good old Jimmy Henson. Yeah. What did you think about Schmigadoon there, Sean?
I only had the chance to watch it once, and then it was last night. Maybe a second viewing, I might have rated it a little bit higher, but right in the middle of the pack, I'm going to give it a 2.5. It was entertaining, and I laughed, but a lot of time I was like, what the fuck am I watching here? Oh, there's the coin jar.
Every time Sean swears, he has to put a coin in the jar.
Yeah, Russ doesn't swear much, so we don't even really mention Russ swearing, although there has been a couple times.
I do swear, I just like to focus on you.
Yeah, that's fine. We're going back to my 2.5 rating. Am I intrigued to watch anymore? Not really. I might, if I have nothing else kind of on my queue to watch, I might watch episode 2. The acting was really good, and the singing and, you know, the musical production itself, the dancing, the choir, like, it was good. It was, like, it honestly, I used to do musicals in high school and all that, and it made me miss it, you know. But all in all, just kind of not sure this show was really up my alley. And for that, so middle of the pack, wasn't horrible, wasn't great, 2.5.
All right. I went back to see where we kind of fall. So I went back, and because we haven't released our last one yet, so I couldn't look back on that one, which is our Sweet Tooth episode. But I went back to all the other episodes to see what was our top rated episode. Sean, what do you think is our highest rating episode based on JARP ratings?
I'm going to say Palm Springs.
I didn't include Palm Springs because it was
a movie.
It was a movie. It was wrong for us to include it.
Series. Shit, man. We've done 16 episodes now.
Yeah.
I guess 15 if you don't include Palm Springs. Our highest rated. Not Yellowstone. You kind of janked my rating on Yellowstone. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to waste everybody's time here trying to guess.
It's
I don't
Yellowstone.
Have... Oh, it is
trust
Yellowstone.
Your instincts. Trust your instincts. Versus Yellowstone. We've got a three series tie for second. All Truth Seekers, Beartown, and Mosquito Coast all have the same score for second. And the third is Invincible.
We rated Truth Seekers way too high, and I think that's
because it was our first. It was our first episode. Yeah. We're sure. I think
there's no way that falls into Mosquito Coast and Beartown for me. Does it for you?
Overall, no. Yeah. But I really did like the first episode of Truth Seekers, but yeah, I don't know. It is interesting when you. Oh my.
Yeah.
It
seasonal.
Oh, yeah, bless you.
Seasonal allergies. Holy smokes, they're bad.
Can you guess the lowest rating first episode show?
Liberator.
Yeah, it's the Liberator.
Yeah, that show sucked.
there All we right. go.
Temperature yeah. check.
Temperature Ready? Check. Yeah, let's do it.
Feel like you want to throw up?
Okay.
So this is when we go back and look to see how we're doing with the episodes that we reviewed. One of us will always carry forward with one of our series and continue to watch to see how we feel about it as we continue to watch the series. I'm supposed to do Shadow and Bone, but unfortunately, I apologize, I did not get to a Shadow and Bone episode.
Whereas you said you might be dragging your heels on that one a little bit.
I'm not enjoying it as much as I hoped, but I should have done episode 5, but I didn't. I did do Borat's American Lockdown.
You finished them?
No, just the next. I did the next episode.
Okay. And what was the next one on?
It was on George Soros. He's like a Hungarian-born American billionaire investor, philanthropist. And I guess I didn't even connect with this because I don't really know Soros that well. But I guess at one point in the house, Jim and Jerry kind of call him out as being a Nazi. And so this episode, and these episodes are very short, was all just about explaining who this guy actually is and what he does for charity and da, 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 da. But he's a billionaire. So, there's maybe a reason to, question, what he's doing. But yeah, so that's what that is about. And I did watch all of Sweet Tooth.
Oh, you finished it all?
I finished all Sweet
Tooth. Oh, I watched the second episode.
Oh,
interesting. Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought even when it was kind of corny, I still really liked it. So
okay, overall, it hasn't got corny for me yet. You obviously, it maybe at a further on down the line it does. But I guess what we can talk about, don't spoil anything now that you finished it, but we talked about whether the Doctor was going to make a resurgence in the show or not, and he came back in episode 2, and I don't think his story's finished yet. Obviously not in episode, so he goes on, and then we got another, I forget her name, the one lady who's been living in captivity.
Right.
And sorry, I'm only in the second episode, but yeah, it ended with her picking up a little piggy hybrid kid.
Right.
So I imagine that's going to be Gus's best friend one day.
Who knows? I mean, I do, but I...
How many episodes was it?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say 6 or 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of, because they are a little, they're 50, they're an hour. Almost. Yeah. They're an hour, and it's got a high production value. So I think maybe 10 episodes would be a lot, I think.
Yep.
So yeah, I imagine it's more like 6 or 8. I haven't seen it. So I hate it because you always go to see, and then it gives you like the title name of the episode, and then it kind of spoils what it might be about. So it's always hard to kind of check that shit out without hitting some sort of spoiler. You know what I'm talking about?
You don't want to get spoiled on this one. I think it's a good ride. I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting with you about this. I'm going to tell you how many episodes there are.
Oh yeah, you can cheat. You tell me.
Yeah. Let's complain about the new layout of internet movies.
Oh, IMDb.
There's 8 episodes.
Okay.
There you go. Get yourself ready for 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Anything else on temperature check on your end?
No. I think that's all. I mean, we discussed, I finished 30 Coins, and I had nothing that I needed to get through other than Sweet Tooth.
Do you want to watch Shadow and Bone for me?
Nope.
This is just a general question, has no relation to Sweet Tooth at all. Do you prefer puppets over CG creatures?
Puppets.
Oh, excellent.
If it can be done right, you know.
Like, would you prefer a Yoda puppet versus a Yoda CG?
Yoda puppet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Yoda puppet looked better than Yoda CG, even though it obviously didn't have the mobility of a flipping, back flipping, front flipping Yoda in that lightsaber battle, but
puppets are great.
Yeah, a real texture, light actually hitting it, interaction with the actual other people in the scene. If you can get the prosthetics right, puppets all the way.
All right. Let's get into Media Rewind.
Woohoo!
I'll be back. So we're looking back at the 1986 Labyrinth. I love this movie.
Jim Henson's Labyrinth.
Jim
Henson's.
Not Pan's.
No, not Pan's Labyrinth. Jim Henson's Labyrinth.
Has it been a while since you've watched this?
I've watched this so many times. I showed it to my girls, I think, last year for the first time, and they friggin' loved it, on repeat forever. Then we got the music, and we listened to the music in the car, and every now and then, Dad, put on Dance Magic Dance. And we'd put that on, and all of us sing along like crazy people, because it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love this. I saw this movie in the theater as a kid. I think I saw it a couple times. I know I saw it at least once in the theater, and I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, I probably did not see it in the theater. I definitely had the VHS.
The thing I like about this movie is that I feel it does hold up in a 2021 lens because no one does puppeteering anymore.
Right.
So this is kind of a If you haven't checked out Labyrinth, it's a hidden gem, cinematic gem, you know, especially for the family. Because they're, yeah, I don't, it, yeah, it's something I think that just will, I don't know, I don't want to say hold up through the age of time, but you know what I mean? It's sort of on its own. You can't,
It is a family children's film. Like it's like I found myself getting a little bored with an adult lens because it is very fantastic. Like everything is just kind of in your face and fun and exciting and but there's not a lot of substance to it.
No.
You know what I mean? Like there's probably like a 30-minute action sequence for the last half of the movie and it's hilarious. There's lots of wisecracking. There's lots of stuff to be like, wow, that must have taken a long time for them to choreograph, or that's a really cool shot with puppets. Like, that's cool how clever that is. But there's no real. It's kind of like watching a Marvel fight sequence. You're like, okay, you know, I don't have to guess what's going to happen, but it is fun to watch.
Right.
But yeah, no, I think there's just. I think it's just cool. It's cool knowing you know where George Lucas went and Jim Henson went and. To kind of, you know, you kind of get little tastes of Willow and tastes of Star Wars and taste of, you know, all those characters and hearing voices and stuff like that. And it's cool to see Jennifer Connelly, like, obviously she was kind of like an unknown, you know, a child actress at the time, mm-hmm. had a couple of films under her belt, but, you know, you can't foresee how someone's going to, move throughout their career and you know to know that she's come so far and she's an amazing actress. It's I think that's cool. It kind of you almost think with our lens it's like oh it's a Jennifer Connelly movie, but I think at that time it was like no it's a David Bowie movie,
right?
Yeah.
How they wrangled this hot, you know, larger than life rock star to be part of this children's movie. I wonder how much negotiating it took, if any. Or
yeah, so according to the documentary, and what I read online is that Jim Henson had already done Dark Crystal, and Love It or Hate It, like it's a pretty cool flick, very creative flick.
Love it.
So he sent David Bowie Dark Crystal, and he sent all the drawings. So there's this. What's the gentleman's name? Brian Froud. So he's like an English fantasy illustrator. So he did a lot of all the conceptual designs, character designs, for this movie. And so Jim Henson took all those drawings and took Dark Crystal and said it to David Bowie and said, look, we're going to do something a little bit more family focused. There'll be actual humans in this one. We want you to, you'd be the kind of like the rock star main character. And David Bowie was in.
He said, you know, Jim, I'll do your show for you if you let me choose my wardrobe. you know, David, we kind of got an idea for... Listen, Jimbo, I'm going to pick my pants, okay? You're going to let me pick my pants.
As long as we can't see your penis and your ball sack, I'm sure it's
David,
okay.
This is a family show.
Well, how
you say you got a problem with my pants, Jimbo? Hey,
wow.
Hey, no showy, no Bowie. Okay.
Okay, David. Whatever you say.
All right, Jimbo. I knew you'd give in to it.
This film didn't win or wasn't nominated for any Academy Awards, which blows my mind.
Yeah, not even like a technical award.
Art direction, like costume design,
music, best song, maybe.
Yeah, like there, it just doesn't like
this Dance Magic Pants.
Yeah, it should have won everything. Yeah, just like a really I would recommend watching Inside the Labyrinth because they really kind of break down all the crazy things that with the puppets, like Hoggle. Obviously was a person inside Hoggle, but the face was controlled by four different people, like controlling it through radio controls that had 18 different motors in Hoggle's face. And again, it's like similar, I think, what they're doing with Baby Yoda now with the Mandalorian, But this is like 1987, right? So they're...
Right, this is almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, so they're doing things here that no one was doing. No one else was doing, but they were doing it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they did some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and wardrobe being one of them. You know, he was 39 when he did this movie.
Okay.
Jennifer
Connelly was like 14.
She was 16. Yeah.
She was 14 playing a 16-year-old.
Oh god. She was 14 in this movie?
I believe so. That's my
Oh my math. Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a bit of controversy. People were kind of dipping into the story a little bit further than what was written on the page about the there is a love story between these two, right? Between Sarah and the Goblin King, if you really look at it. She's in love with him and is sort of under his spell for a bit, but then, you know,
spell.
He is evil, but...
He took a child. He threw that child into the air.
He did. You know,
only Michael Jackson does stuff like that.
He's not winning any Babysitter of the Year awards, that's for sure. But I think the Goblin King lies a little bit in a gray area. I don't think he's so black bad as I think he's got some good in his heart, and it comes out a little bit in some of these scenes where he actually cares about Sarah. I think he's in love with her as well. She's in love with him. Creepy. And I think if you really want to dip into it, you can kind of dissect it a little bit more. And I think those people that did dissect it like that back in the day made a little bit of a stink about it.
Interesting. You know? I didn't, yeah.
But obviously it didn't catch wind or anything like that. But yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that's not the intent. I didn't go back
and watch it again, with that in your mind. It is a love story between the two of them.
Interesting. The ballroom scene is definitely where they're dancing together, and there's a little bit of a seduction kind of thing, and that's where the age thing kind of made me squirm a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little questionable.
But there is no. You know, unlike the movie with Robert De Niro, where he, not Primal Fear, what was that movie that we watched with Robert De Niro?
With Robert De Niro?
Yeah, the movie that we did. The movie we went back to. Fear. Cape Fear.
Cape Fear.
Where he, you know, that was definitely, you know, when he kind of sexually came on to the 16-year-old.
Right.
That was definitely crossing the line.
Was crossing the line in the movie as well, right?
Like, sure. Yes.
And they.
Right. Well, this is like disguising that behind.
Yeah. This was never. Fantasy. This was all just between the lines kind of stuff.
Right. Which probably makes it maybe even worse. Because it's hiding, it's showing you, but it's trying to interpret something.
David.
Trying to make it okay by making it like a fantasy dream-like sequence. I don't know.
Cut. Hey, what the fuck's going on here, Jimbo?
David, when you're dancing with Jennifer and you got your tight pants on, you need to calm down a little bit. Okay, David.
I can't fucking help it if I get a Woody when I'm dancing with Miss Connolly.
Okay, but you know she's 14, right?
And I'm sure David Bowie
That's
was
your
a professional.
Fucking problem, Jimbo. You fucking casted her. I don't know why David's all of a sudden Australian.
Shrimp on the
right, Jimbo, you fucking mate. I got a couple fucking things. Hey, one, I'm not English. I'm actually Australian.
Yeah.
Two. I want my fucking tidy pants on all the time. Three, I want to dance with a fucking 14-year-old, you know what I'm saying, Jimbo? Those three things, I'll do your fucking flick for you, alright?
You have to double your coins when you swear with an accent.
Yeah, okay. Sure thing, Mr. Bowie.
Ah, you call me David, Jimbo.
What if it's more like,
Jim, I'm not quite sure on this.
Oh, well, I was thinking that your love interest would be a young girl.
All right, Jim, well, since I'm 39, are you thinking like 23, 25?
Well, I was actually thinking more like 14.
Oh, Jim, we can't do that.
Okay, well, we'll just say she's 16.
Oh. All right. Listen, I'm fucking Kermit. I can do what I want.
What can I? We've been doing some beta testing on the Muppet Show. We can pretty much get away with anything.
They're fucking puppets. Come on.
Yeah. I have one female character on the whole of Muppet Shows, and she's a pig, and she's high maintenance, and people love it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So maybe we got to question Jim Henson and everything he's ever done.
Maybe, maybe. I think he was strong-armed by the Bowie.
Let's see. Come on.
He was. It was all Bowie's demands, man.
This is. I doubt it. I bet you Bowie's a gentleman. A real gentleman.
God rest his soul.
Yeah, God rest his soul, dear Bowie. Yeah, no, I thought it was cool. Despite the issues we're having with it now.
Labyrinth's Dark Crystal. Which one is better for you?
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth?
Again, and I think for me, I do connect with it a little bit more because there's humans in it, and I think that's the point. I like, obviously, the music. Just the world that they create with Dark Crystal, it was freaking amazing. Like Chamberlain. The sketches, that's awesome. I love that guy. What about you?
I don't know. That's a tough one. Probably Labyrinth, but not by much. I both, you know, grew up with them, love them both, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to come back to that.
Right.
Probably Labyrinth.
Yeah,
just David Bowie's pants. It's really hard to compete with that. And with that,
it's time for Stargazing. This is where we talk about things that we're super psyched with, things that we're watching outside of this podcast. How are we filling our time, Sean?
You mean working 12 plus hours a day?
Yikes.
Anyways, the cool thing about what I'm doing right now at work is that it's very, I can never say this word properly, monotonous. Did I say that right?
Monotonous. Monotonous.
Monotonous.
Monotonous.
You know, it's the same thing over and over again. It's just kind of rinse, recycle, repeat. So I can put movies on in the background and it's ain't no thing but a chicken wing. Anyway, so.
You can do your work and watch a movie at the same time?
Yes. Sometimes. Crazy. Sometimes. That's with this particular task.
With this particular task.
Yes,
okay.
I can. All right. Yes, I can. Very I'm not monotonous. Like completely, but you know, I can rewatch movies that I've seen before and glance over every now and then. I like to do that. Anyways, yeah. Joe Rogan recently interviewed Quentin Tarantino, and my manager listened to it and recommended it to me. And I listened to it. It's about a 3-hour podcast. This guy named Joe Rogan, he does podcasts. I don't know if you've heard of him.
What a follower. Did he start doing podcasts after we started doing
podcast? He started after we did, man. I don't know. Anyways. It's a fantastic podcast. It's so good.
I guess.
3 hours goes by really quick. But then me and my manager start talking and we're talking about rating our favorite Quentin Tarantino movies. So I've gone back and rewatch the entire Quentin Tarantino catalog.
Kill Bill Volume 1 and Kill Bill Volume 2?
I'm on Kill Bill right now. Okay. And then I just have Pulp Fiction. And then I'm good. And then I've watched...
So you're not doing it chronologically in order?
No, I almost started from the most recent and went backwards. I started with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Because I'd only seen it once. And I saw it in the theater. And I don't think it's really... I don't know. Well, I'm sure a lot of people disagree with me here, but I enjoyed it more on my second viewing at home than I did in the movie theater.
Okay, controversial take here.
But anyways, it used to be my least favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, and it no longer is. That's not to say my least favorite Quentin Tarantino movie is a bad movie. It's just my least favorite out of all the ones he's
done. Roger, Roger. Right. And which is your least favorite?
I believe it would be The Magnificent Eight.
No. Right.
The Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. Magnificent. Yes. Eight. There is another cowboy show called
The Magnificent.
Yeah, that's probably where you got the Hateful Eight. Anyways, yes. Yeah. Could have been a stage play. I think it would The Hateful Eight.
Right.
Same with Reservoir Dogs. I think both of those, while they're
very minimal sets.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think they would translate well to stage plays.
Right.
Which, I don't know. You think, I'm sure he's thought of that before, so who knows? From the Joe Rogan podcast, you could tell he's only got one more movie he's gonna do, and then that's it.
He's
But he's in no hurry to do it, and he doesn't know what he's doing yet. So, Quentin Tarantino's not going anywhere anytime soon.
And do you think that's all bullshit? That he'll do his last movie, he'll retire, and then in 5 years he'll do another movie again? Like, can a Quentin Tarantino really walk away?
Yeah, exactly. Can someone that loves movies that much walk away from them?
And with so much success.
He might just shift gears and do, like, because he's starting to do writing now. Okay. And he's writing plays now and stuff like that. So he might finish with movies, but will he stop creating? No, I don't think he's someone that will ever stop creating. It just might not be a movie. Maybe he goes into television. Maybe he goes into writing. You know, not that he doesn't already write, but you know what I mean, like exclusively. You know, he starts writing, becoming a novelist on the regular, right? I don't know.
Maybe he'll use his power and influence to help other people become directors. Voices.
Yeah, like a masterclass kind of thing. I don't know. Yeah. But he sounds pretty convincing that one and done. Yeah, who knows?
12 seasons in a movie.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. I'm almost done. Really enjoying that. Leftovers, we're still working on that. Season 2.
Good,
I don't want you to spoil it, but I really hope this thing goes somewhere. Yeah, you're laughing because it's probably not going to. I'm going to do the third season and be like, oh yeah, we ran out of money and it got canceled. I hate that.
I don't know if it's going to go where you think it's going to go, but it definitely goes somewhere.
It's got to go. Yeah. I'm not looking for end all be all answers, but.
Okay. Cause good.
Cause maybe a little bit of something.
Look for answers, but there will be like, the
some sort of resolution,
character development and character resolution will happen.
Okay. So we can stick into it. And when we're done it, we will have a sense of
completion. Yeah.
Okay.
And you might have more questions and you might have.
That's okay.
That's fine. Yeah.
I just don't want it to be one of those series that just ran out of
just
money.
Drop.
No. Perfect. Perfect. Nope. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. New He-Man came out on Friday.
And
I just watched.
How was that?
It's good. It's good. It's got it's a little
He-Man.
It's a little funny. Kevin Smith wrote the first episode.
So it's like Clerks?
It's a huge homage to the original He-Man. Like, they didn't try and do anything new. Obviously, it's updated animation and voices and stuff, but they didn't change. Same story. Even the characters look the same. They've just got a bit of a refresh to them. So I like that. If you're a fan of the series as a kid, and you're like, ah, shit, are they gonna ruin it for me? Nope. It seems to be, so far, I'm only one episode in, but a bit of a love letter to the original He-Man series with some new story. So the girls liked it. So I'm excited to, to be our morning cartoon. One of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's all I got. I talky talky too much. So you've got trailer talk here. I haven't watched,
dude,
any trailers that have stood out to me. So you
got
obviously
three trailers for you.
Perfect. I've probably seen them, and I just can't think of them.
First one. No, I'm going to say this for the last one. First one, Green Knight. Go watch the Green Knight trailer.
Green Knight. Oh, Green I know what you're talking Knight. About. Yeah.
Dev Patel. Looks like Arthur, kind of like King Arthur, kind of time. Looks pretty cool.
But a bit of fantasy, no?
Yeah, a little bit. It's kind of like, it feels like a little bit of like a Pan's Labyrinth kind of feel to it. But looks super cool. Then have you seen the new Dune trailer?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, that looks epic, man. Yeah. We'll
definitely go see that in the theater.
Definitely. Okay. Seeing that one. I love the original Dune. So
here we go. Trailer talk, buddy. Are you ready? Watch the trailer for The Last Duel.
Okay.
Okay.
Do I have to go watch it now?
I mean, you could.
You guys pause the podcast, go watch The Last Duel, cue it up. Okay, play. We'll see it in 2.5.
All right, so we just watched... I don't know, stop sharing your screen, Sean. Okay. All right, we just watched the trailer for The Last Duel, starring Jodie Comer, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck as Simple Jack.
And Adam Driver. Looks awesome. It has the potential to suck.
Yeah.
But I'm going all in. I'm gonna cross my fingers and hope to die. Ridley Scott, buddy. Ridley Scott did it.
Ridley Scott directed it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know. When Ben Affleck pops out with that blonde funky haircut, it's hard to take him seriously. But we'll see.
Oh hey, guess who has credits for the screenplay? Guess what combo pair?
Ben and Matt.
Award-winning Ben Affleck.
Well, they wrote it, eh?
Matt Damon, yeah. They with the Nicole Holofcener?
Okay.
So do you know Jodie Comer?
Not personally, no. Do you know
her? She's in the Eve, Killing Eve show.
No.
I'm not saying if I do or do not like Killing Eve. I think it's got its strong points, but she is hilarious. She's amazing in it. I say this right now to the world, give Jodie Comer a Marvel movie, give her everything. She could do it. She kicks ass and she's, probably one of the funniest people I've seen on TV. So yeah. Hopefully she gets everything that she deserves.
And then some.
And then some. I saw The Quiet Place 2.
Okay.
That's on Prime now. So
Yeah. I want to watch it really bad. I just haven't gotten around
it's
to watching
it. It's good. It's very simple. It's kind of like a continuation of where they left off with a little bit of like
this happened back in time.
Yeah. They do a little bit of like the day that it all happened, but then they shoot back to like following right after the last movie.
Nice.
It felt just like a really it felt almost like we were talking about high production value TV shows now. It kind of felt like an hour and a half television show.
Okay.
It didn't, so like as far as like a, it wasn't like a cinematic Marvel, but it was good. Like it was, they know what they're doing. They know they put a bunch of jump scares in there. Emily Blunt's amazing. The other kid actors are great. It's fun. I definitely recommend it.
Nice. I'm totally going to check it out.
And I told you I had watched Black Widow.
You rented it, right?
I did the premiere access.
$40 for it. Nice.
Paid $40, and I would have paid the same if I went to the theater, and I would have definitely seen that in the theater.
By the time you go and get popcorn and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're banking on you, like at least like a family of four or a couple watching it, you know, where they can see the value in it. But like,
and I can watch it as many times as I want now. Like I can, like I will have access to it for now until everyone gets access to it in October. Anyone with a Disney Plus subscription.
Oh, it's not like how you rent a movie and you can watch it. You get to watch it like for 48 hours and then it expires.
Exactly. I can watch it as many times as I want now.
Oh, you get to watch it until it comes out on Disney Plus. Well, I guess forever then.
Yeah forever. Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. As long as I have a Disney Plus subscription and because I've played the premiere access, I get to watch it now as many times as I want and forever.
What they're trying to do with the premiere. They're just saying you get to watch it before everybody else on Disney Plus.
I get earlier access than you. So I could have watched it.
I kept interpreting it as rental.
A one-time only. Yeah.
Yeah, like how you rent movies on Apple and you get 48 hours. You can watch it as many times. Oh.
I don't. That's interesting. I don't know.
Then that is some value. Then I guess.
Yep. I think for a show that you would really be interested in, I know, I assume HBO is going to do the same for like some movies as well. But we don't, I think our subscription with HBO Max is different than in the States. So
yeah,
excuse me, I'm not quite sure how that works out.
It's all starting to add up now, eh? Yeah. I canceled cable because it was expensive and all this shit. Now, I think it's still cheaper than what I was paying for cable 10 years ago.
I think overall, though, Black Widow was kind of, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to watch it again. I kind of got bored.
Well, you can. You can watch as many times as you want.
Yeah, I paid $40. I saw a terrible movie. I took the kids to Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Oh, God.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's got like 31 on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a. I don't even know what I hate.
I can't stand LeBron James. Just the guy's just so egotistical beyond.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know basketball, but yeah, it's not a good movie either way.
Perfect.
And then Ted Lasso season two. We had mentioned it quickly off the top, and that just dropped. Saw the first episode of season two. It's pretty good.
You've already watched it?
Yeah.
Fuck us. Okay, well, I guess I can still pick it as my pick.
You're going to do Ted Lasso season 2?
Have you watched episode 2?
No, they are releasing it week by week. One episode a week.
All right. Well, I might pick it. So okay. I might have to hold up.
Well,
hold
up. You're going to pick a season 2, not a season 1? It's really...
But we've already watched season 1.
I know, but we usually don't pick for this podcast.
But everyone's watched season one, so they're like, yeah, it's great. Should I watch season two?
No, they're not. They're saying, I'm watching season two. They're saying, I may keep my Apple subscription because I'm going to watch Ted Lasso
season two. Fucking find something else, then. I'll find something else. Because it's pretty much a given. Everybody on Earth is going to watch, with an Apple subscription, is going to watch.
Well, yeah, because they bought an iPod or an iPad or a Mac, and they get a one-year subscription, and now... free and now, yeah. Perfect. Good times, buddy.
Real good times, man. What did we always forget to do at the end?
Rate people. Give us a rating on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. I don't know. Feedback. We kind of did our give us some feedback, people.
I think that's it. Tune in next time. We kind of drop these every 2 weeks or so if anyone's listening for the first time.
I try to. Yeah. Sometimes no worries. Sometimes life gets in the way, but yeah, we try and keep up every 2 weeks.
Sometimes work is so hectic that you can watch movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can watch all of the Quentin Tarantino library
film. Yeah. Library. But you know what I can't do while I'm working?
Oh my God.
Edit the podcast.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down.